I'm here today with Mia Siegert, author of Somebody Told Me, which just came out in April, a novel of trauma, identity, and survival. Thank you for joining me, Mia, and welcome to the Learner Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really great to be here.
Can you touch on a brief outline of the plot of Somebody Told Me with no spoilers?
So that's the part where it's always tricky. And I really want to say that I commend all of the trade reviewers because I think they did a way better job than me about that. So much of the story kind of builds up on these little tiny hints, so it's difficult to. But the super abridged version would be that after being assaulted at a convention, Alex/Alexis, for convenience sake, I'm just going to refer to them as A through the interview. I think that's easier because, especially since it's talking about them as a whole, sometimes it's easier. A voluntarily moves in with their uncle, a Catholic priest, to escape the toxic cosplay community they're a part of. A's really lost a huge part of himself as their whole life's revolved around costuming, competing, doing elaborate work, getting scouted by colleges. So really moving to the last place where one would expect them to be, it's self-preservation, and it's a move that probably no one would do, which is exactly why they do that. They want to be hidden. They want to disappear from the limelight. And almost immediately, A overhears a confession through the vent in their bedroom wall as the rectory shares a wall with the confessional. As this has been brought up by a couple of reviewers, I wanted to state that under the guidance of 7 sensitivity readers, I decided to take artistic liberty with this just to do a better story. Practically, that probably would not happen. This is just, it's fiction. It was something that just seemed to work better. And after discussing with them, including one of the sensitivity readers who was studying to become a nun, felt that was the right thing to do. And through the vent, they start to hear these really, really tough confessions. Some of them are soft, and then eventually a really horrific one. When I was writing the book, one of the things that stayed in my mind was this wonderful older French film, Amélie, where the protagonist starts hearing people's life stories and decides to act as a guardian angel, and in the process gets overwhelmed and trapped in a very cruel headspace. This is really similar to A. They constantly fight the anxiety voice in their head that sometimes is cruel and other times alarmingly accurate, even if they don't want to hear that. They get so obsessed with trying to fix things, pretty much fix their life and give it purpose after losing cosplay, when they hear not just a horrific confession, really, really horrific, but their uncle absolving someone in the clergy of sin completely, it's a massive trigger for abuse victims, whether Catholic or not. And one of the most important things about Somebody Told Me is how it deals with assumptions, and some of them unfortunately have deadly consequences.
The protagonist in Somebody Told Me is bigender, perhaps the first bigender character in traditionally published popular YA fiction, and with a bigender author. I am very glad that this character is told from an own voice's perspective. Could you introduce the audience to Alex/Alexis and explain some of the nuances of being bigender?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, it's an honor to be the first. When writing this, I had no idea. And one thing I wanted just to state at the beginning is that this is coming from my experience, my lens. The bigender community is very small in general, and my story is not a blanket one for every single person. Every single person who identifies as bigender might not have similar-ish experiences. So for Alex/Alexis, they're a very private person despite outward appearances. With their love of cosplay, they face a lot of struggles with objectification, especially bodily wise. As a boy, Alex is really, really worshipped. As a girl, Alexis is often asked why she couldn't be more like Alex and, you know, cosplay more male characters, really look like him. And one point asked why, you know, she couldn't just transition and, you know, be Alex all the time. With being bigender, it's difficult for many people outside of the community to understand. The closest I've come to getting a lot of cishet folk to understand is this is sort of an intentionally poorly phrased thing, but sometimes what I would say is it's like you're trans, but only part of the time. That's not accurate, really, but I find that's something that many cishet people get. And sort of the idea that it's one or the other. With the non-binary umbrella, many people are starting to understand the both or none factor. You know, the idea that you wake up as one or the other, that you wake up you're male or you're female, and there's no gray space in the middle. That's critical. You don't get to choose what you want to be. And at least in my case, very rarely one would switch within the day. With other people, it might be more common. So I just wanted to, you know, reiterate that this is through my experience. I used my experience to flavor my character. It does not necessarily represent, you know, the rest of the bi-gender community.
Thank you. I'll say as a reader that this was my first introduction to bi-genderness, and I did find it, as it went on, I sympathized so much. There's at least one scene where A unexpectedly transitions during the day, and it's totally harrowing to experience even as a cishet reader. So I really appreciate you sharing this perspective, and I think it was really effective.
Thank you.
You cover some difficult topics related to the Catholic Church and sexual abuse scandals. However, you are very intentional about not painting religion or religious people in a bad light. Some people in the church behave badly, and some people in the church do not. This must have been a very delicate line to walk. Can you share a little about what you hope readers take away from it?
Absolutely. And this especially hits close to home. About 2 days ago, I actually received fan mail about this. And I've had many people, many readers who are queer and very religious, many of them Catholic, some not, reach out to me and thank me for this. Sort of in the way to put it, I guess kind of one of the easier ways to look at it is that I think one of the biggest themes in Somebody Told Me is assumptions. Early on in the novel, it's sort of a little teaser, a mild foreshadowing, and it's early enough in chapter one that I don't feel it's a spoiler. A brings up their immediate biases that they had towards the Catholic Church and how it took them a very long time to realize that people are inherently good. But like everything, there's a few bad ones. In every single religion, every single group, there are always a few bad ones. And unfortunately, with media and everything else, we mostly hear about the bad. We don't hear as much about the good. In terms of people who are Catholic, Catholics are some of the absolute kindest people I know. Many friends, family, former significant others are or were Catholic. I have immense respect for them. That said, one cannot deny that there are massive issues with the Catholic Church. Their anti-choice stance is one of them, something my family took so strongly that many, many years ago, my mother went to the Women's March alongside Olympia Dukakis to directly protest Pope John Paul II when he was in the States, when he was in New York. Arguably worse than that is the silence surrounding canon law. This is what I directly confront in Somebody Told Me. By not holding people accountable for abuse, essentially giving them a free pass, abuse festers. It welcomes predators to practice their abuse openly, and some victims of abuse end up becoming abusers themselves, probably in some normalization effort that doesn't justify it, but that just happens. There are many documentaries about the forced silence in the church that are very hard to watch and can be very triggering, but if you have a support system or a strong stomach, they might be worth a watch. One of them is The Keepers on Netflix, and HBO produced a documentary, Mea Maxima Culpa. And both of them I highly recommend if you have a support system, as they are very, very difficult series to watch.
In addition to assumptions, as you've mentioned, abuse is a common theme in Somebody Told Me. Abuse from family and friends, abuse within institutions, and even to some extent self-abuse or self-loathing as a result of abuse. What would you like readers to take away about surviving abuse in any form or overcoming similar life obstacles?
So I have very strong opinions about this in general. My father is a forensic and clinical psychologist, so I'm a huge advocate with not just fighting the mental health stigma, but getting help. I recommend, if at all possible, to talk with a therapist. And also, if someone says, hey, it's not working, I've tried therapy before, try another therapist. A lot is about finding the right fit. For every good therapist you have, there are a bunch of bad ones. I can't say how many terrible ones I've gone through, but one of the ones who I see now, I've been seeing him for probably 15 years now. So it really takes a lot of patience and looking and then just trying to understand and realize that it's not your fault. One big thing is acknowledging that there was slash is abuse. There's a shame that victims are conditioned to feel, and with it, silence and self-blame. It is never the victim's fault, or survivor, as some people call it. I prefer saying victim in a way, but do whatever is most empowering or proper for you. Many victims of abuse also tend to seek out people who are like their abusers, and it continues this really awful circle. I recommend evaluating your friends, as many of them aren't friends, and eliminating toxic people from your life. Even if terrifying, it helps your mental health, and it also helps you find new friends who are healthy. I recommend evaluating if there are any romantic partners as well. I dated someone for 2 years who pretty much checked off every single marker of abuse that they had for some of those sites. And if you're even looking at the site saying, am I in an abusive relationship, then most likely you are in one. Not going into explicit details about me, I did share with them a few incidents about stuff that occurred, and they immediately said I was to blame and that they didn't happen, all the gaslighting, everything. One thing, what I will share is about how something like that can affect people. When you share something that an abuser did to someone who is an abuser, you really question yourself for a long time. For many years, I protected one of my riding trainers who I hated with a passion. And he actually caused a huge accident, quote unquote accident, as I discovered later on, or rather acknowledged it was deliberate. And I had to eventually get surgery on both of my knees, and I'm in constant pains, physically constant pain, even after surgery. And now I have a lot of deeply embedded issues I struggle with in terms of body image, internalized transphobia, internalized misogyny, internalized ableism. And those are things that I'm going to struggle with for a very long time. And it's really difficult. So just sort of screening your friends, taking caution. Sometimes people say it's hard when you're going into something very, very suspicious and very, you know, issues with trust. But if there's something where you've noticed a pattern, I think it can actually be very helpful for people just to, you know, take time. Don't jump into something necessarily right away. Take your time and really reevaluate what's going on in your life.
You are a costume designer by trade, and costume design and cosplay features throughout the book. Can you tell us more about your day job, what inspires you creatively, and how you put that out into the world? Costume design is so important to A at various points in the book. What do you hope that readers learn about it?
I love talking about my day job. The first thing I want to get out, while I'm grateful and it's fun, when something's a job, there is burnout. And especially when you have clients or you have a production, it's a very high stress job. So it's not just as much fun as if I were doing it for hobby. When I did it solely as hobby as a cosplayer, it was way more fun. I still love my job. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I started out as a cosplayer. I never actually went to school for it. I'm completely self-taught. And I didn't start until I was in college. I was 19 and looking for a creative outlet, especially because before then I was trying to qualify for the Olympics in show jumping, and my career abruptly ended, partially with injury, partially with some other stuff. So I had nothing. When I started cosplaying, I started exploring all of this creativity I was not permitted to do. I never really had the chance to be a teen or a kid, because all I was focused on was the Olympics, and especially being not of the income necessary to make it, I really pretty much spent all my time doing that. I was essentially a high school dropout when I was 16 too. And then later on, I ended up going back to school, and I did get a master's degree, and I became a professor for a long time. In terms of cosplays, I did a bunch for an anime D. Gray Man, Get Backers, Yamina Metsuai, Fruits Basket. I did South Park. And then there was a horrific series of incidents that made me abruptly leave fandom. And in 2010, I started making cosplays for Cats the Musical, where actually in an online forum, I met my now husband, who lived in Australia and has since immigrated here. And having a very niche fandom that people recognize and is wildly theatrical drew a lot of attention to us. It was sort of some good attention. I started going to shows in costume as a super fan, became friends with cast members on the national tour, and eventually one of them contacted me about doing a show. And they actually brought out David, my husband, from Australia to work on it with me. The first show was a little bit of an emotional disaster. There was an in-house costumer who literally destroyed all of my costumes because she was jealous. And I vowed never to do the show again. Then 3 years ago, I married David. And immediately after our wedding, one of my friends from tour asked, could I do a show for him? That he was doing Cats. You know, he really, really needed help. So right after my wedding and after my first knee surgery, I had less than 2 months to do 39 costumes, including quick changes and everything. I got the passion back. And then enlisting some of those stage-worn costumes, I was contacted by Netflix for the show Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and also contacted by the CW for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend about whether they could use our cat's costumes for their shows. And it's sort of grown from there. By getting back to costuming, a huge part of me felt relieved. Writing is a really, really stressful job. A lot of times people have this mythos about how it's cathartic. And for some people it is. At the same time, when you have to look at writing a really good story, getting emotions out, getting all of these different things and checking to see if it's problematic, trying your best to make it not problematic, and thinking from all of those perspectives, it's high stress. It's very, very lonely. I did not anticipate that costuming would become so big that it would be our main source of income, which was surreal. And it's kind of neat where we've been able to explore with some new technology we have. We were gifted a 3D printer. We have a cry cut machine and all sorts of stuff to amplify our creativity. And I think it's sort of kind of neat. That's one of the things that I think that A really misses in the series. And then as they start sort of looking at costumes again and sort of hesitate, they really do feel a bit of themselves come back. And they also learn a lot about different things in terms of assumptions. I'd be very cautious not to say a spoiler right now. And just in general, I think that people, A included, need outputs and need a way to show expression, breaking away from molds and things like that. So it was really exciting to go and take a love of cosplay and just really incorporate it, really use it, you know, to go and do something kind of neat. And of course, I'm very excited with young adult and seeing so many books that are about cosplayers now. That was something that when I started writing young adult a few years ago, I didn't really see much of it. So it was really, really exciting to see that change and to see such a passion starting to turn a little bit more mainstream. I love it. I think it's wonderful.
You created a Spotify playlist and a book trailer for the book, and we'll link both of those in the podcast notes. What was some of your inspiration for the songs that you chose?
Okay, so they're sort of like little two parts of this. With the book trailer, I was very, very fortunate to have become friends with two wonderful voice actors. There's Zeno Robinson, who a lot of people know from My Hero Academia as Hawks, and also for Cyborg on Young Justice, among a bunch of other shows. And he's just wonderful. And as well, Caitlin Clark, who is a newer voice actor, and also was the main, well, I shouldn't say the main, but one of our sensitivity readers for Somebody Told Me. I think I said that because she actually was studying to become a nun for many, many, many years. So that was exciting to do. For the playlist, I'm guessing from the title of my book alone, most people would probably assume that music's important, especially you know, Somebody Told Me from The Killers. With it, it's kind of funny. I was listening to some music that was popular when I was in college or high school. I don't really remember which. And The Killers, Somebody Told Me, came up. And given the story revolves around having a bigender protagonist who overhears confessions where, quote, somebody told them, unquote, things, as they're absolutely a liar about where they get their sources and information, it works on two levels. The song itself is about gossip and rumors, as is the book. And it also speaks about how the trans and non-binary community adopted Somebody Told Me as their anthem, thanks to the super catchy chorus. It's also challenging to talk about this because I get excited about music and just avoiding spoilers as there are a bunch of plot twists. Some other tracks stood out to me for a variety of reasons, such as Sister Bernadette, also known as Bernie, and I cannot say more on that end about spoilers with Enigma's Return to Innocence. There's Transitional Deacon Jameson, who's a priest in training at seminary, and he has a really, really huge passion for Gregorian chant covers. And then there's Dima, who's just a delightfully charming, amazing Russian fellow who befriends Alex / Alexis with Imogen Heap's 2-to-1. And the novel revolves around themes of trauma, assault, and survival, so these tracks really reflect that. And I suspect a bunch of you might not be as familiar with some of these musicians, so I'm delighted to share them with you. Many of them are not pop artists, so I think it's wonderful to expose people to different songs. And also, I would really love to go and hear what people have to think about the tracks or what they have to say. And after people read the book, if there are ones that people think that I should have added to it, I am all ears. I love music to bits.
Thanks. I think that would be a great call for the Goodreads page. If you have any suggestions for songs that should go in the Spotify playlist, you can leave them in the comments there on Goodreads. We'll make sure that a link to the playlist gets added to Goodreads as well.
That would be fantastic. That would be a blast. And I just love music. Music's very important to me. My mom was a concert pianist, and my parents both taught music at Harvard for a long time. So just music is really stands out to me. And although my taste in music is very different than theirs, it's just wonderful. And I love learning about new songs. So just hearing about reader creativity, I sort of feel that once a book is published, it really is the property of the reader. The reader is the one that really takes command of it. And it delights me and it excites me. So that would be wonderful to see that on Goodreads.
We'll do it. Is there anything else that you'd like to address?
I'd like to address two things. First, I just wanted to do sort of a little thank you. I wanted to thank everyone involved at Lerner and Carol Rhoda Labs, especially Amy Fitzgerald. She was the right editor. I knew it immediately for the book. She got it. It was just wonderful. And I'm really grateful for the publisher to give me the opportunity to tell a story that many people wouldn't risk due to such a small marginalization. And also with going and doing a pretty big criticism of a problem in the Catholic Church. Wanted to thank my agent, Travis Pennington from the Knight Agency. He's been my rock, and I, no joke, in terms of confidence, we always talk about confidence with writers being so low. I actually sent him an email about how I thought I should quit writing, or thought I shouldn't do anything, and he got it to Amy right away, and then it was acquired so quickly, too. It sort of just felt like, wow, you know, I actually can do this. He's been very encouraging. Kimberly Morales did a great job with the cover and really clever layouts, including the three crosses for the Holy Trinity with the page breaks. And again, a huge, huge, huge thank you to Caitlin Clark and Zena Robinson for their voices in the trailer. The second thing is a little bit more serious, but I think it's critical as Somebody Told Me deals with abuse. On the day of Somebody Told Me's release, Cardinal Pell was actually acquitted of his heinous crimes. For people who are not as familiar with him, he's the third highest ranking person in the church. I guess technically he was removed, but Pope Francis has made it very, very clear he is still heavily involved. And basically with this, the Australian legal system is different. The jury found him guilty. The Court of Appeal found him guilty 2-to-1. And then the High Court dismissed it completely after maybe a little bit more than a year. The Royal Commission into institutionalized sex abuse released the redacted findings on Pell recently, and as it was redacted because they felt that there would be bias. And unfortunately, with the redacted information that was released, they found that Pell absolutely knew about the abuse, helped cover it up, and also his participation of abusing minors. And one of the reasons why I really wanted to mention this, besides just taking it personally, it's a slap in the face that this occurred. This act alone is allowing even more abuse to occur in the Catholic Church. It's not giving justice to the victims. One of Pell's victims took his life. A young man did that because he was not able to find the solace that he needed. It's unforgivable. And Pell, among many others, not just ruined lives, they basically protected these monsters. The church instead should be turning in these people to keep their religion and the whole church holy. It's ethically wrong that under just canon law, they're using that as an excuse to confess sins and to really let people get away with things. It's an alarming rate of high PTSD for people that come, young people who came from the church. And honestly, I refuse to tolerate the silence on this anymore. People keep trying to speak, and people are getting silenced at every single opportunity. And I really hope that if people give somebody who told me a chance to not just look at my book as what it is, but to also see what's happening in the Catholic Church, and to see that although everyone has done this sort of mythos about Pope Francis being way more liberal and way more progressive for the church, look at his record for what he's done. He is welcoming these abusers to stay in his church, and he is keeping them there. And this is not going to go and help anyone survive. And something needs to be done about it. And I really, really hope that if anyone can take anything from this outside of the abuse, to just even consider stepping forward, you know, to talk about things that are very uncomfortable, and to try to offer as much support and comfort for victims.
Thank you again for joining me, Mia, and for sharing more about your book with us. Somebody Told Me is available now wherever books are sold.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us here on the Learner Podcast. Tune in again next time for more author interviews and the stories behind the books.